We are Rogue Media Sports.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. Ed Werder back from Denver. Back, he's been embedded with the Broncos. And Ed, before we get rolling here, and I generally have my sunglasses on, but we're going to get extremely professional, and you and I are going to add video to our podcast. Most people did this like 5 years ago, but we're going to do it. And we're kind of excited to announce we'll be doing that with Rogue Media Network. And all our buddies over there, Corey and Mike, is working with us today. Very excited to have that. So, Ed, I know you don't get enough TV time. So now, even your podcasting, people can see you and then see that beautiful backdrop that you have.
Courtesy of former Cowboys official photographer Ron St. Angelo. Brilliant photographer. He's done many pieces. His work is available online. You know, he has this famous photo from the Super Bowl of Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, and Troy Aikman at the Super Bowl, shot from the back, walking off the field. And he painted one of those for me. And I had that as my TV backdrop, but it was too Cowboys specific. When I wasn't doing TV on the Cowboys, I'd have to take the whole thing down. This way I just removed the helmet and the football is generic. And so I can speak about any team I might be covering. And this year I was not at the Cowboys draft because they were picking 24th or so we thought. And they picked a little later and they picked an offensive lineman, which is also unattractive for television purposes. And so I was sent elsewhere.
Yes. And you were sent to Denver. And I think it's interesting because for people that don't know, Ed had a close relationship with the Saints organization, has gotten to know Sean over the years. And through Sean, he knows Kenny Chesney. And so Ed's a big country, bro country guy, and goes to some of these concerts, but really gets to do some neat things backstage and all. But Ed, that had to be kind of cool. You know, you had dealt with Sean and all of the Saints, and I'm sure he has a few of his old Saints friends with him, but for the most part, he's kind of got his own thing going, has brought in a new crew. Take us through a little bit about like what that was, especially like as you were preparing, because I saw some of your notes, you were kind of saying, hey, this could be, you know, this could be a historic Sean Payton who inherited Breeze, didn't he? I mean, like, it's just kind of interesting.
They signed Breeze the year he became the Saints head coach in 2006. Breeze obviously was interested in going to the Dolphins as a free agent, but failed his physical there because of a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
The Saints were in a position where they could take the risk and did, and were more than well rewarded for their faith in Drew Breeze. And, I mean, Breeze, you know, this time last year, Breeze was a big advocate of, oh, Russell Wilson, he's so fortunate. His best years are still ahead of him with Sean Payton and the Broncos. And obviously, that was a resounding failure. And Sean released Russell Wilson with the biggest cap hit in NFL history. They're paying $54 million this year not to have him on their team. And so I went into this draft, and we all knew the Broncos had interest in a quarterback. And nobody needed a franchise quarterback on a rookie contract to offset the Russell Wilson cap hit more than the Broncos and Sean Payton. And that's why we were there. And obviously, they made the 12th pick. It was Bo Nix, the quarterback from Oregon. I think that was the player Sean had targeted and would have taken even if J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix had still been on the board. I think he liked Ben Nix's intangibles and his qualities as a quarterback. He recited a whole bunch of stats in terms of his ability, you know, in short, in red zone, in end of game, end of half, under pressure, in shotgun, under center, and he excelled in all those things. And so for the first time since Sean Payton became a head coach in the NFL with personnel control in 2006, he drafted a quarterback in the first round.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting, and it was fun to have you there with in familiar territory. And by the way, you spend a fair amount of time, and you grew up in Colorado, so there's a lot of symmetry there. And I moved over a little bit because maybe my wife, this picture I have of her behind me, I thought she might get mad if I had that up there. But also, so you could see Arnold Palmer saying goodbye on the Swilken Burn. I was there covering the British Open back then, and then I have some master stuff to the right of that. So since you described your, by the way, that football behind you looks a little deflated. I wonder what team
Is it Tom Brady's autograph? Tom Brady autograph football.
Okay, so we have a huge amount of information on the Cowboys draft. We've both dug in, maybe too
much.
We're
all in. We're all in on this draft.
Our folks at Rogue are already talking about, should y'all do a two-parter? I'm like, let's see if we can get through one before we try the two-parter. Mike, please play the music. There it is, and it is time to get officially into Doomsday Draft Post Special. And I think it's appropriate because you were pouring your life into Broncos coverage. But then once it was over, you were kind of like, you had one eye on what the Cowboys were doing. You saw them trade down. You know, I think people, and I'll give mine, but I want to get yours first. Before we get into the nitty gritty and kind of get into some of these different players. And I know you've talked to folks that, in fact, one like really big time person, I don't know if you're allowed to reveal who it is, but we can go kind of almost pick by pick. And I've kind of gone with the top three, but I did a deep dive into Tyler Guyton, the new offensive tackle. So I can provide some information there. But Ed, first of all, your just overall thoughts on 3 days of the Cowboys draft. And I won't ask you to give a grade unless you want to, but were you generally pleased, you know, with what they accomplished? I think a lot of people are still kind of stunned that they had that many picks and they still don't have a running back to show for it. What were a couple of your biggest takeaways?
Well, the person you referred to that I spoke with, I've spoken to some personnel people and general managers in the league to get some, you know, independent objective assessments of the players the Cowboys picked, and we'll go through that. The other person you were talking about is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. That's Jim Nagy, and he and I spent 20 minutes going over what the Cowboys did in this draft. But in terms of my own personal overview, and I prepared for this draft like I was going to cover the Cowboys, even though that wasn't my assignment. But knowing that we would do something afterward, I wanted to be well-informed and follow things. And, you know, it's been, I think, a disastrous offseason so far. Their offseason before the draft was as bad as the loss to Green Bay at home that sent them out of the playoffs. And you only get so many opportunities in the NFL to improve your roster, and they effectively wasted one of them, that being the free agency period. They brought in Eric Kendricks, and they signed Royce Freeman, a linebacker and a running back, but they lost a lot more than they gained. And on top of that, they have not yet gotten any of the contracts done with their three key, you know, young players. Dak Prescott apparently going to play on the last year of his contract and then have the right to become an unrestricted free agent 2025. CeeDee Lamb, the price keeps going up as these receivers sign contracts. And then, of course, you've got Micah Parsons. His situation's still achingly unresolved, as I like to say. But I thought for the draft, you know, I thought they did a good job, not only in terms of getting the best player available, which they said is the reason they didn't draft a running back, which they clearly need. And I thought they did, you know, I think one of the hardest commodities to find in the NFL is offensive linemen. And when you've lost Tyron Smith at left tackle, and you've lost Tyler Biadasz, your starting center, those are troubling issues that you have to deal with. And I thought with one move in the first round, trading down from 24 to 29 and effectively, you know, giving up the Duke center, Barton, that everybody in the league likes, they basically got potentially either a guard, starting guard center in the third round, and they got Tyler Guyton, a potential left tackle from Oklahoma in the first round. Although I will say, to hint at where we're going with this conversation, that not everybody in the league thinks as highly of Guyton as the Cowboys do.
All right. I think I would probably give this draft, and I find that interesting what you said about the offseason. I didn't think anything could be as bad as what happened against Green Bay. And I haven't thought of it in those terms, but that's a very interesting way to put it. And boy, that sounds pretty dire when, I mean, you say it that way. I thought the move to move down, you know, sometimes Jerry has gotten caught sort of moving around and not maybe accomplishing that much, you know, to get somebody they apparently liked and then to use the pick they gained to get another potential walk-in starter. Now, again, Ed, one of the funny things about it is, like, by sort of mismanaging some things, they put themselves in positions to really have to hit two starters. Well, they haven't done it yet. We think they got some pretty good players, but we don't know until they get out there. And I do think it's, I don't know what you think about this. I think it's kind of like, I don't buy this as a writer / broadcaster, this thought of like, well, because he had a left-handed quarterback, he protected, and this was Dylan Gabriel last year at Oklahoma, he protected the blind side. So really, he should be able, to go over to the left side. I mean, this is kind of fascinating because, like, Tyler Smith was supposed to be the future left tackle for the Cowboys. But now the thought is, well, they've compared him to Larry Allen. This guy's, like, could be a tremendous all-pro guard for years to come. So let's leave him at guard. But let's put this poor kid who honestly hasn't played that much football, that much meaningful football, even going back to high school. And I've
13 starts at Oklahoma.
Correct. And only saw it on the right side. I find it a little bit naive to just kind of everybody go, you ought to be okay. Ought to be okay after at left tackle, which is maybe, like, other than quarterback, the hardest position to play in the NFL. And it's just like, they'll probably be okay. So I don't know. They need both of these guys to be starters, but to act like it's just going to happen. Now, we had reservations about Tyler Smith, tons of holding penalties, was at Tulsa, was doing it sometimes against not great competition, but still had a huge amount of holding penalties.
And Travis Frederick too, right? The same thing. When they took him in the first round, at the bottom of the first round, I know I was somebody who collected a lot of negative impressions about the Cowboys spending a first round pick on Travis Frederick, who they've never really replaced. He's still the best center they've had in the last 10 years. And I guess maybe we give the Cowboys the benefit of the doubt on these offensive linemen because, you know, they've been so successful with taking offensive linemen in the first round. I mean, Tyron Smith in 2011, Travis Frederick 2013, Zach Martin 2014, and as you said, Tyler Smith in 2022, and all of them have become Pro Bowlers, right? But that was with a different head coach. It was with a different – Mike Solari was with Tyler Smith, but he hasn't been with any of the other guys. He didn't develop any of the other guys. That was, you know, Hudson Houck and other people like that. So the system's different. The assistants who are – going to help develop these players are different. So we can't automatically assume, well, because they've done it for the last 10 years, they're going to do it with these couple players as well. I mean, this is very unusual that the Cowboys would spend two of their first three picks on offensive linemen. It's only the third time in the common draft era that they've done that. They did it in 2004 and 1994 as well. So, but to think that, BB's going to walk in and switch positions and be a starting center when he's really been – he's played everywhere at Kansas State but center. He did it in practice. He did it in pregame. Has never done it in a game. And to think you're going to just automatically walk in and be an effective starting center in the NFL, I think is a big leap of faith. And then what you're saying is true about Guyton too. Yeah, he protected the blind side, but he's playing right tackle. Now he's got to go play left tackle because he's got a right-handed quarterback. And that'll be a big change, but maybe they'll both pull it off, but I don't think it's going to be, you should just assume it's going to be an instant success for the Cowboys next year on the offensive line.
By the way, Ed, I thought this was worth noting as we were preparing and I was getting my pre-podcast coffee. I got a text from the guy who used to run the Cowboys draft. And he was just like, hey, what are you guys up to? What are you and Ed up to? Tom Siskowski. And it's just like, you know, all our people are kind of checking in with us to see. Now with me, people are like, now, what are you doing these days? I'm like, listen, I'm on radio every day. It's like, I'm not in hiding, but it's always good. Always good to hear people like, hey, what are you up to? But now this draft, you said it. And by the way, some of the people we talked to, I'll be sharing information that I got from an AFC scout. Ed has talked to, he just talked about Nagy's very, Nagy is tremendously respected as the head of the Senior Bowl. And then Ed has somebody else. I went back, Ed, and talked to the man who discovered walking down the hall one day, Guyton at Manor High School, and said, hey, I need you to report to the athletics. I need you to come out to the field house. And the kid said, well, I mean, he was like heading into his senior year. It may have been the end of his junior year. And the kid said, well, I got class. He's like, that's okay. I'll talk to your teacher. It's fine. And he comes out there and they put him through the paces or whatever. And somehow, because he'd been at a couple of different schools and bounced around, they literally had a dude who was just playing basketball and really had no interest in football because his mom didn't want him to play football and get hurt. They had like a 6'7", 6'8 kid walking the halls of Manor High School, which is somewhere outside of Austin, by the way. And anyway, so that's how that's the kind of research we do. The high school coach, and then when he went to TCU, that's where he went first. And it was just like, this was like an extremely immature, you know, kind of learning the ropes, but it took him a long time in his career to ever break through. So they will now ask a lot of this guy. We can't underscore that enough, that this guy, kind of like these NBA players who, oh, he only played 2 years of basketball before he got to college or whatever. Well, this guy truly played 1 year of organized football before he got to campus at TCU, and then didn't play much at TCU, and finally ends up starting for the Oklahoma Sooners. Now, Ed, I'm curious as to, because you, and we're equal opportunity, we say the positive things about players, we say the negative things. What have you learned about first-round pick Tyler Guyton that you can share with us?
Well, I was interested after getting the opinion I'm about to share from an executive personnel director for an AFC team about Guyton, that last night I saw on television Bill Jones interview him. And one of the questions he asked him was, why did you only start 13 games? And to his credit, Guyton basically said, hey, I was immature. I didn't take it seriously. I didn't really apply myself until last year. And that's very consistent with what this source told me. He says, Guyton's extremely gifted, has all the physical tools. His off-the-field demeanor, coachability, work ethic, focus, et cetera, are all called into question. They did not like the kid at OU. He has continued to live off his natural ability while not taking care or improving any of his intangibles. Definitely a boom or bust candidate. Now, Nagy told me, again, the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, said that when he first started to review this player last summer, he compared him to Tyron Smith, of all people, reminded him of what Tyron Smith did at USC. But he also said athletically, he said he's a slam dunk left tackle athlete. I mean, you wouldn't want to waste this guy on the right side. You want him as a blindside pass protector, as athletic as he is, but he's going to need training. He said, I'm not sure whether they drafted him to play right away, but I would put him next to Tyler Smith and I'd give him all the reps I could give him as soon as possible, like starting in these OTAs in this offseason program. Get him as many reps at left tackle as you possibly can and make him feel comfortable there. The question still remains, is he going to take it professionally? Is he going to devote himself to being everything that athletically he's capable of being, or so it seems? And what kind of influence will the professional players around him? You know, they put him in his locker is right between Tyler Smith and Zach Martin. So if he emulates either one or both of those guys, it'll be a big step forward for Guyton in his development.
Now, if Oklahoma gets wind of what you just said, like any of these kinds of things that we do, I guarantee you there will be pushback. But again, whoever is telling you this knows that. And I will say this, I tried to, for this and some of the other things I do, I tried to get his college O-line coach, and I have not heard back yet. So I, you know, maybe maybe that'll happen. But Coach Biedenbo, who, by the way, was an old Biedenbo was with Mike Leach, an old Texas Tech, West Virginia, then ends up at OU, and he's a very famous offensive line coach. And I guarantee you, he poured into this kid. Now, Ed, I'll just tell you real quick, this is from my longtime AFC scout on Guyton. And this guy talks in the vernacular of all scouts. So I'm just going to keep it right where what he says, because what you said is really fascinating to me. So what it sounds like to you is a lot of upside, but it's always a concerning when one of, you know, the major stop that he had where he finally became a starter, that maybe they weren't enamored with this guy. They said of Guyton, size plus length, athleticism, feet, good pass pro, pass protection, obviously, has movement skills, needs technical work, and as we've pointed out, more experience, but starter physical ability. Now, Ed, I'll tell you how accurate some of these things you and I have had over the years. Years ago, there was a guy from Ball State that the Cowboys took in the third round. His name was Brewster, like Robert Brewster. And they thought he might step in at tackle or guard and help him. Obviously, he took him in the third round. And the guy says to me from the AFC, he's going to be a major injury risk. And I said, I look back, I say, the guy started like 40-something games. Like, I what are you talking about? He's never missed a game for injury. Maybe missed one game in his whole career. The guy says, it's going to be a major injury risk. Ed, Brewster tore his pectoral muscle lifting weights and never played a down for the Dallas Cowboys. So these guys seem to sometimes know what they're doing, that just comes back to mind. Now, Ed, Cowboys, dig in there. And because I am interested, Beebe is a player that, again, I watched the Big 12 closer than any other college conference because of my ties to Baylor, of course. This guy was like, you know, you'll never hear somebody tell you we didn't like him, because I bet he goes down as one of the most beloved players they ever had at K-State. He was a tremendous player for them for years. But before we get to him, I am curious, Neyland, your thoughts, and then we'll get your folks' thoughts on it that you talked to. But this is a guy that is on the rise, and I think that's an important kind of an ascending player during the draft process. And this is also somebody, it's always kind of sad, Ed, when a player that fans love, like Tank over there, has played defensive end for the Cowboys for so long and been so good because of contract and everything else, everybody's like basically like, well, next year will probably be his last season. And so the thought is, Neyland is a potential replacement for him. But again, we thought the guy they drafted on the defensive line last year might make a nice impact, and he has yet to do that. Thoughts on Neyland?
Well, first of all, you're right. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence just turned 32, and he's entering the final year of his contract, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much he embraces helping this player develop to the point where he may make himself expendable. And be a good teammate about it. We've seen guys like Brett Favre take criticism for not wanting to help their replacement, that, hey, taking the attitude that my job is to do my job and be the best player I can and help us win games. It's the coach's job to develop players. I'll be surprised if that's the attitude that Tank takes, but here we are. Micah Parsons was double teamed on 35% of his pass rushes as an edge rusher last season. That's the highest double team rate faced by an edge rusher in the last 5 years. And then keep in mind, the Cowboys lost Dante Fowler and their number two sack leader, Dorrance Armstrong, to Washington and Dan Quinn this offseason. So there are some snaps for him to take. Now, Sam Williams, we presume, will get a lot of those opportunities. But this guy is a very athletic guy. 56th overall pick, had a high athleticism score, 13 sacks, 28 tackles for loss. He played what in the MAC, so it's not the greatest conference. But one of the things Nagy told me as he assessed him was he had him at the Senior Bowl And he said, even though he was a small school player, he had some alpha dog in him that a lot of the players from bigger schools, including the SEC and the Big Ten, really gravitated toward him. And he acted like a leader and an accomplished person around those players as he interacted with those players. And then as far as just him as a player, he said, hey, he's got a real confidence about him, hard to find his skill set, super heavy-handed guy, a lot of natural power in his body, plays extremely hard, can run, can chase things down. He's 270 pounds, big, heavy, physical, and hard playing. He's one of those guys, Nagy said, if I was building a football team, I would want on my team for sure. Sounds like a good fit for a Mike Zimmer defense to me.
Okay, some people call you a heavy-handed reporter. And
they also call me a heavy-footed athlete.
I've seen you fly around the tennis court. I don't think that's accurate. Now, I was told of Neyland, this is the AFC scout, was a riser through the draft process, motor, high motor, physical, good competes, has strength and run defend ability. And boy, that's something DeMarcus Lawrence has done really well and doesn't maybe get enough credit for. And then of course can move inside and has that inside rush ability. And Ed, you brought it up. Some of the things the Cowboys have lost along the way, we've made a big deal out of the Dak contract, the CD Lamb, you know, Micah's contract's coming up, but while that's all going on, like Dorrance and several others have left the building, right? Even the big man in the middle, you know, Hankins. I mean, it's just kind of like one after another. So they have a lot of areas to fill. So this thought of like Neyland having time to really ramp up, I mean, I think he needs to be in the rotation. I'm not saying he has to be a starter, but I think they need him to get in there and get going pretty quickly.
I think it's high praise, though, when, you know, Will McClay and Mike McCarthy speak about him and suggest that the comp for him is DeMarcus Lawrence. And, you know, Greg Ellis, who's a defensive assistant line coach for the first time, he tells people that Neyland reminds him of himself, which is, you know, that there's a lot of virtues in Greg Ellis. Yeah, he wasn't Randy Moss. They should have picked Randy Moss, but Greg Ellis had an excellent career here. And if Neyland is that good a player or he's DeMarcus Lawrence, then this is a great pick.
Yeah, I would say so. And Greg gave him some really good years. And it's kind of fun to see him part of the program. It is the Doomsday Podcast. We're working through some of these draft picks and giving you some of the research that we've done. On BB, I agree with you. That's kind of interesting. Why, you know, like everybody's kind of like, well, yeah, he'll be fine on the left side, even though he hadn't done it. Talking about Guyton with BB, like, oh, he'll be a good center, need a center. So he'll be, you know, Biotish has left the building. We'll just plug BB. Now, I do think as an interior lineman, Ed, he would be along with that West Virginia guy. Now, I'm too Big 12 heavy. I admit that. I'm probably about to get like that with Deion because he's coming into the Big 12. But I just see these guys a lot. And there's a center that came out of West Virginia, Zach somebody, Harris. Anyway, really, really good. BB was described to me, Ed, big guard, strength, inline blockability. This is from our AFC scout. Lacks arm length, good instincts, average athlete, but feel for angles. Not rangy, but good anchor and holds a firm pocket. I think honestly from watching him, there's a nice nastiness to him. And it made me feel good to watch him and to see him put some Texas Longhorns on their rears and pancake a few guys down there near the goal line.
Well, Mike McCarthy said, I don't recall another lineman in draft that has dropped as many defenders on the ground as Cooper Beebe. He said, I love his play style. And the Cowboys need more of that. That's one of the reasons. I mean, we'll get to the running back thing in a minute, but I think one of the real justifications for bringing back Ezekiel Elliott, whether it's as a starting running back or as part of a rotation is they lost so much attitude when he left the building. And I think this kind of player and Nealon, that's what they bring beyond their skill set. And, you know, I think Stephen Jones probably said it right that he's going to have to beat out Brock Hoffman, you know, and TJ Bass, both of whom played some last year, even started some games in emergency situations last year. And the question is, can BB be a center right away? I would say Hoffman has a significant advantage on him, just having the experience that he's had. And now you're asking this player who's been very effective playing four other positions at the college level to try and play the one position in the NFL that he's never really played. But when, as far as, you know, Nagy evaluating him, he said that he is a big, square, powerful, thick bone guy, an old school, raw bone offensive lineman, best suited to guard. I see him more as a guard than a center. He's played all over. He's played tackle for them. You could probably get a game out of him in a pinch if you needed him to play a tackle because he's done it. But he said to me, he's a guard. And I don't know what the long-term plan is for him, but he's a big, stout guy, kind of deceptive athletically. He really questioned when he first started watching tape, why am I watching this guy? He doesn't look like that good a player. But then all of a sudden, he began to reveal his athleticism and his dominance. His attitude that you mentioned, the nastiness came to bear. And he thinks he's a really, you know, good player, likes to dirt opponents, as we said. So it'll be interesting to see if he can make a position change at the NFL level.
Which running back do you think that the Cowboys did not take in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round is going to be the breakout? Because you know there'll be one, right? One of those running backs. And it was interesting because there were a run on running backs in a few rounds. I mean, there was one at one point. I know there were three straight in one round. There were five straight at one point. There were some moments the running backs got going, and it did seem like Jerry was in love with the University of Texas running back, but he went 10 spots before the Cowboys picked in the second round. We're talking about Jonathan Brooks out of University of Texas, who Jerry said it was the greatest interview he'd done in 30 years.
And so we have him high, high on our board.
Yeah.
And then he had to sit out about 85 picks waiting to see if this guy was going to be there or not. I would say the running back that, I mean, I thought there were a lot of good fits at running back for the Cowboys in this draft, even though there weren't necessarily a running back draft. And the position certainly been devalued in the NFL, but I thought the Tennessee kid who went to Miami, super speed guy.
Great, great player.
I thought he was a good fit for here. And then I think Kamani Vidal, the Troy running back who was taken by the Chargers, Jim Harbaugh. I think this kid could be a surprise. Not mark him down as a guy you might want to take as a fantasy sleeper this year, because Harbaugh obviously going to run the football. They did sign two Ravens running backs, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins for 1 year contracts. But this guy is going to be the long term running back with the Chargers, and he could get an opportunity as soon as this year. And I think he would have been. I don't think he went till the sixth round. And I think he would have been a good player for Dallas.
It is amazing. Some very productive backs.
Did the Cowboys have a pass rusher from Troy who was pretty good?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Yes. Who's in the Hall of Fame?
DeMarcus Ware? Is that the guy? Yeah. That's him.
Yeah, we remember it well, and we remember who they were deciding on at the time. And the other guy is not in the Hall of Fame. As I recall, but it was a decent player. And speaking of the Chargers now, Ed, let's, as we go down here, and again, we're not going to spend all day on like the two seventh round picks, but you did talk to, you got like notes on everybody, so we could do some quick hitters.
All right.
But I would say
thumbnails.
Let's
do some thumbnails.
Yeah, thumbnails. But I thought the biggest, one of the early head scratchers, the Cowboys have been known to be like, okay, they're on point. They traded down. They got two potential starters. Okay, first three picks, Cowboys. And then there's always a point where it seems like they wander around a little bit. And I would say the pick that was kind of like, huh, was the linebacker out of Notre Dame, Marist. I like a guy named Marist. But third round, 87th overall. I just, this one to me.
Leofo, is that his last name? Leofo, Maris Leofo?
Leofo, yeah, Maris Leofo from, I was going to let you say it first, from Notre Dame. And again, it does some good things, don't get me wrong, but this was one, again, when you say, well, how would have been nice to take a running back, and do they need a linebacker? Sure, sure, and they were too light. They were light, and LVE has had to retire, but this, I don't know. This one, I was not enamored with this pick. What were your thoughts?
Well, I'm assuming that Mike Zimmer was personally involved in making this selection, evaluating this player who did start 25 games at Notre Dame. So he's played in big time football games, and obviously the Cowboys have a great need at the position, with you know, Leighton Van Der Esch retiring in the offseason because of the neck injuries he came into the league with, becoming an issue that threatened his ability to function as a normal human being. So he's retired. I talked to Nagy about him, and he said he tries to watch everyone on their board who's a fifth round or higher before they get to the next season. He said, and this was a player he was really not aware of, and then all of a sudden with one play, it got Nagy's attention. He said they ran a North Carolina State ran a tunnel screen, and Maris read it. Receivers running inside at the line of scrimmage, and Lofo hit him, destroyed this poor guy. He said, just lit him up. It was a great snap, and he said he saw the closing speed, the explosion on contact, two really great traits, obviously, for a linebacker. And he's like, okay, who is this guy? Looked him up. Oh, my God, he's a senior. He's been playing at Notre Dame. Under the radar, but that one play just kind of caught his eye, and he said that's kind of the coolest way to scout a player, is when they catch your attention when you're not really looking for them. But, you know, then described him as a long off the ball linebacker who can run, plays hard, got thump on contact, and athletic enough to run, got enough speed to run with tight ends and backs. And, you know, obviously taking him in the third round, you're expecting him to play. You're in the third round, you're looking for starters. So I suspect that he'll compete with Damone Clark for playing time.
All right. And then, by the way, Ed, I was looking back at it's very weird to see Jerry and the Cowboys. I mean, from what I know, that second round pick, Marshawn Nealand, no real injury history, no character issues. I mean, they love a guy with some baggage in the second round. This kid seems to be pretty clean. I thought that was a little.
They call him the blinking light, didn't they? That's when everybody's like, why didn't you take a running back? Like, this guy was on the board. We had him graded substantially higher than where we could get him. And I do think Nagy overall, his point was, hey, they got a lot of value for almost every one of their picks.
Okay. All right. Well, you're making, I think, Cowboys fans feel a little bit better. And I always wonder if Nagy, like the Senior Bowl, the guys that come to the Senior Bowl, if he gets a little more excited about them. But he gives us very accurate breakdowns. Okay. The quick hitter round. Let's go next with Carson, Kalen Carson, the fifth round cornerback out of Wake Forest, who I think they're also really hoping he can give them some special teams, because he was great on special teams helping out Wake Forest over the years.
Well, they haven't done anything in terms of securing Stephon Gilmore to a contract. And, you know, they do have Trayvon Diggs presumably coming back off his ACL injury. So there is some uncertainty at corner. As good as Deron Bland was, and Bland was taken in the fifth round, just like this kid. So if he can perform to that level, I think we'd all be shocked. But Zimmer began his career as a defensive backs coach. This will be a project for him. I think he's, you know, a pretty good player, a little raw in his technique, does a lot on natural ability. But, yeah, I think you'd always use a good corner, and especially under the circumstances I described where – really only Bland and Jordan Lewis are coming back and are healthy and have had a lot of playing time and a lot of starts. Otherwise, you've got uncertainty with Gilmore and whether he's coming back or he's going to go somewhere else and play. And you got Diggs coming off an injury.
Okay. And the next guy I mentioned, I want you to use Jerry's term after the first round the other night, sexy or not sexy. Okay. When I mentioned this player and what round he was taken in, Jerry wanted us to know that Guyton was a very sexy pick. And I don't know exactly what, I guess he's just saying the position he plays perhaps, and maybe his athleticism, but I did find that funny. I think what Jerry's saying is, I know we've taken a bunch of offensive linemen, we've hit on them, and y'all didn't think these were sexy picks. But right. he thought the left tackle, the potential left tackle, was in fact a sexy pick. Ryan Flournoy, sixth-round wide receiver out of Southeast Missouri State. All right, and I don't think that's the one in Springfield. This is somewhere else there in Missouri. He was really good in the Senior Bowl week, so maybe Nagy can speak to that. But known for having great hands and playmaking ability, so while it would have been nice to land a running back, not bad to try to take a flyer on an exciting prospect in the sixth round there.
Well, he compared himself, Flournoy compared himself to Dez Bryant, if you want to try and put your mind around the way this guy plays. And that means, I think, that he's seen as a guy who doesn't create a lot of separation, but he high points the ball and can be physical at the top of his route with defenders to create some kind of space. But it's going to be a lot of contested throws to him. He's not going to look very open very often. That being said, his combine numbers were freakish. He ran 4.44. He leaped like 39 inches, and had a great broad jump. So the other thing that Nagy said was, we saw this guy at the Senior Bowl get over the top on some fast defensive backs. So he does have a vertical component to his game, although his specialty, as you might imagine, with Mike McCarthy's West Coast style offense is, you know, running the slants and the drags and that kind of stuff across the middle of the field, a John Taylor, you know, sort of player with that repertoire. But he said he did have the ability to get deep in the Senior Bowl on some of these defensive backs who are obviously high-end players themselves.
Okay, I like that. The small school guys, both Neyland and this receiver, Ryan Flournoy, kind of walked in there, wasn't hat in hand, like, I'm just happy to be here. They got out there and they competed pretty hard. And then, Ed, I'll let you take on these next two. Seventh round, Nathan Thomas, offensive lineman out of Louisiana. And then Justin Rogers, seventh round defensive tackle from Auburn. I can't help but see, and again, the Cowboys need as many people because they lost Hankins and Neville Gallimore to free agency. So they need some of these players to hit and get some help in that rotation at defensive tackle. It makes me think, Ed, of the really good seventh rounder the Cowboys got circa, you got to go way back, like 2004, 2005. Jay Ratliff, seventh round pick out of Auburn. And man, he ended up with quite a few sacks. His career ended not the way he wanted, but he actually ended up being a huge success as a seventh-round pick. Ed, any thoughts on these two guys?
I mean, I'm going to rely probably pretty heavily on Nagy and a couple of other personnel people, but Nathan Thomas is an offensive tackle from Louisiana Lafayette. They've had some good players out of there. I think they've had three offensive linemen drafted into the NFL or make NFL rosters over the past few years. And I think this is a player that most people saw as a sixth or seventh-round developmental, you know, type of player. He's a big guy. He looks the part in person. He's got pretty good mobility for someone his size. I think there were some, you know, kind of questions about his overall makeup and his maturity level, which that takes us back to the tackle they took in the first round. So maybe they have that in common. And then as far as Justin Rogers, the defensive tackle who spent time at Kentucky and Auburn, I was told that Auburn really wanted him to come back and play for them after he left to go to Kentucky. But, you know, everyone's trying to play with bigger bodies inside on defense, kind of a trend in the league. Take a shot on a seventh round, you know, big body guy makes sense. But I think there's some people who have been around this particular player who thinks that he's got, you know, big, lazy big man disease, you know, and he don't want to work real hard. He don't want to chase the ball all that often. But again, I think Mike Zimmer's the kind of guy who can coach some of that out of you.
I think that's right. And we need to get Mike on soon. And I always like to name people that, like in Tyler Guyton's case, that are huge, instrumental in their lives. Jimmy Mitchell, who was the former AD and head coach at Manor, was the one, again, who saw him walk in the halls and said, you need to play football. They put him at defensive tackle. TCU said, we'll offer you, but you're going to have to be an offensive tackle. The kid kind of saw himself as more of a defensive player at that point. And then he got to TCU, and they even used him like tackle eligible, threw a touchdown to him one time at 6'8". He moves extremely well, great feet. But then Chad Glasgow, who was the defensive coordinator at TCU, had a vision for him and went down there and the guy who coached for Gary Patterson. And what happened is, Ed, Gary Patterson got fired halfway through one of those seasons, 2021, I guess it was. And so that kind of, you know, ended his time there at TCU because he was kind of a project under that regime. And then he ended up at Oklahoma, and the rest is history. So even at, if Oklahoma wasn't always in love with what he did for them, they certainly got him to a point where he was a first round candidate. So, so somebody was doing something right on the OU campus, but I also wanted to credit TCU. Now, Ed, before we sign off and let you get to dinner, I mean, you've had all kinds of trips. You've been in Denver, you've flown back just to do this special podcast. I do want to kind of get your thoughts on, because we haven't talked in a while, you're a good Dak whisperer. And I'm not, that doesn't always mean you're in his ear all the time, but it means you do kind of have a feel, and you and I have watched these contract things play out. He was at an event recently, and for the most part, he was, hey, I don't mind playing. This is going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. He had one little throwaway comment that interested me because he was like, if I'm here or if I'm somewhere else. That was the one time, like in those quotes, where he kind of at least opened the door, like, hey, it may be somewhere else. Now, you've heard Jerry say, I like to let the leaves fall. And I'm like an option quarterback, and I can run it all the way out to the sideline and then make the pitch. Well, Ed, we've seen this movie before. They tried to kind of let it play out, and then he had the injury, and he ended up getting an enormous contract. The Cowboys probably could have gotten a better deal if they had have done it earlier. They didn't. And in some ways, here we are again. Where do you think Dak's mindset is? Because, like, on one hand, he's being paid enormously. He's played before into the final year of a contract or close to it. So he's no complete stranger to this. But what do you think his mindset is? And do you sense that there could be any coming together on this? Or do you truly think he is going to play this final season on the final year of his contract?
Well, I think a couple of things that raise concerns for me is that he had to be insulted that Jerry Jones, the owner of the team and the general manager, basically acquitted the front office when he said Dax had some of the best supporting casts we've ever had around here. And we haven't gotten it done in the playoffs. That's blaming the quarterback and saying, I gave him capable teams and he has squandered those opportunities. And then the other thing, I think if you're Dak, is this guy has never really appreciated me as a player and me as a quarterback. No matter what he says, look at his actions. His actions are, never before have the Cowboys had to franchise tag a quarterback even once, and he's franchise tagged Dak Prescott now twice. And he's allowing him the opportunity after this season. Dak is now in control of the situation, first of all. And so when he creates the question of, hey, maybe I won't finish my career here, and he's, as you said, doing this for the first time, I think he might be tired of the whole thing. I mean, I think everything Jerry's actions indicate he does not believe in Dak Prescott, no matter that he said at the owners' meetings, Dak's a quarterback who can still win a Super Bowl, you know? And I understand where Jerry's coming from because, I mean, he has had good teams almost every year, and they have failed in the postseason. He's 2-5 in the postseason. But, you know, I mean, Dak, from the start, remember when he was a rookie and they went 13-3 after he took over unexpectedly for Tony Romo? Remember how Jerry was so whimsical as they went into the playoffs thinking, wouldn't it be great if Tony got healthy and Tony could take over the team in the playoffs and we win the Super Bowl with Tony? I mean, he's never really appreciated what Dak has done for this franchise, in my opinion. And I think Dak's frustrated by it, and he should be. At the same time, he could, like, wouldn't it be ironic if after 28 years, the Cowboys finally get to a championship game or, God forbid, a Super Bowl, and the quarterback leaves after the season because he has a no tag clause, no trade clause, and Jerry didn't sign him to a market value contract before the season began?
Yeah, it would be the most Jerry thing ever, except for nobody really believes they could win a Super Bowl at this point because it's been so long. And the only similar thing to compare that to would be when Jimmy Johnson left, you know, under similar circumstances, when he decided he had had enough and he and Jerry parted ways,
if you look at the Dak situation, the only situation that really is a parallel is Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins was franchise tagged multiple times by Washington, then left and signed a big free agent contract with the Vikings. He also has not really performed well in the postseason as much as he's won during the regular season, as great as his stats have been. And now he's on his third team. So if you look at it from that point of view, I think it's entirely possible that this is Dak Prescott's last season in Dallas.
It's hard to believe. I do think if they somehow, even if they just made it to an NFC title game, the pressure to re-sign him, I think Jerry would just have to pay up. And they would just, obviously, Dak would have him completely over the barrel. But he would just have to basically, Jerry's other comment, Ed, was basically like, we put a bunch of people around him, he didn't get it done, and now we can't. He's paid so much, and he's so much against the cap. We can't really put people around him.
Right. He's got to do more with less now, and that's his challenge. And I think part of this too, another factor, is Jerry and Steven are tired of losing contract negotiations to this quarterback and his agent.
Yeah, I think you hit on it there. Now, are they going to lose one to CeeDee Lamb? Because he's in a spot where he's got a massive payday on the way. Some of these receivers are starting to get their extensions. You're seeing the numbers. We think his number's going to be above $30 million a year. And he's going to want to get something done. And, right, you know, again, they don't want to lose a deal. But what if he had the nerve? He's holding out right now, but it's just kind of the off-season stuff, so we don't really make a big to-do of that. But if he pulls a Zeke, there's already precedent of Zeke getting them to cave and getting an enormous contract, which pretty soon after that they came to regret. Where do you see the CD thing heading? Do you think there's a much better chance they get something done with him than Dak?
Well, the market is almost twice for CeeDee Lamb for wide receivers than what he's making now. I mean, he's got the fifth year option for like $17 million, and the two receivers up in Philadelphia just signed for over $30 million. So The problem is going to be Jerry's going to threaten him with the franchise tag because he doesn't need it for Dak. He can't use it on Dak. And he doesn't need it yet for Micah Parsons. So he's going to threaten CeeDee Lamb with it. He's going to threaten, well, CeeDee, you're going to play for $17 million this year. And next year I'm going to franchise tag you. And you're going to play for whatever that number is, but it's not going to be what your market value is. So it'll be interesting to see if he's willing to stare down the Cowboys like Zeke did when he won, or like Dak did when he's won.
All right.
He certainly has a numerical argument, statistical argument. Mm-hmm. He's like, you see the money that AJ Brown just got from Philadelphia. Well, there's only two receivers who have been more productive than him the last 3 years. And that's Tyreek Hill and CeeDee Lamb. So CeeDee's got the leverage, but as I just described, Jerry has a certain amount to use against him too, threatening to make him play for the fifth-year option at 17 and then the franchise tag next year.
I just like the fact that whether or not they bring in Zeke, who now Jerry thinks could be the starting running back at age 29, and somehow he was great at the end of the time with the Patriots. The numbers don't really bear it out, but he still counts. Whether he's with the Cowboys or not, $6 million against the cap, and you know that was going to be dead money. So it's kind of like, hey, might as well bring him back. We're going to be having to account for him anyway. So that's and they brought in Royce Freeman, I think it was, and they've got Dowdle, but this is not an inspiring group. You brought up the Chargers, some of these teams that are bringing in young, exciting running backs. I mean, it's like, it's still, I know it's not worth as much money anymore, but it's not like teams that were, I mean, you saw those numbers, Ed. It was like the teams that were in the NFC and AFC championship games were among the most efficient and proficient running teams in the league. Right. You may not feel like you have to pay these guys a huge amount anymore, but you still kind of need them to be good. You need the threat of a run game, and the Cowboys are in a really interesting deal. Well, Ed, this has been fun. I think people will be very excited to see you on camera. They're used to kind of getting you in small doses, you know, like a 1 to 2 minute hit.
You gonna B-roll some of this?
I'm gonna B-roll a little bit of this, and we may turn this into like a three-parter. Let's see how long we've gone here. Oh, we're over an hour. The late great Frito. That's the one of the things he always was frustrated with me on. Matt, we can turn this into three podcasts, and I would say yes. And you want to get paid three different times, don't you?
I always love Frito. Man, a good business sense.
That's right. But Ed, say hello, by the way, to Rogue Media Network. They do a tremendous job, and they're going to do a lot of things for us, but it's just exciting. They do an incredible job, not only with the sound, but we're going to really ramp up our YouTube efforts, which is to say we're actually going to have a YouTube page and our Facebook. I mean, if people didn't get enough of us, then it's going to be ramped up. So
I know what you're saying is we're going to be harder than ever to avoid.
Yes, and we make it pretty hard anyway, but this is going to – we're really going to be taking it to the next level. So I know you're excited about charting our way now. And, of course, Stephen Simcox did such a nice job pinch hitting when we lost Frito last year. So we think Stephen was great, and he's even worked with Rogue to kind of get all the things set up like they need to be. Ed, usually I handle a lot of the technical things, as you know, but this time I relied on others.
Must be why we were so lacking in that area for the past 5 years.
Thank you for noticing. All right, Ed, appreciate you, and we good job there in Denver. I know Sean, that had to make Sean just feel like old times to see you kind of right outside his office or wherever you were set up out there, but that had to be a fun experience. So appreciate your draft coverage, and I think this special now will do enormous numbers for us.
Fantastic. I look forward to doing this on a regular basis, as always, Matt.
All right, there he goes, Ed Werder, as we get ready to meet some of these rookies. Our draft spectacular on the Rogue Media Network. For Ed Werder, I'm Matt Mosley. Good night, everybody.
We are Rogue Media Sports.